Sponsorship of this KQED podcast is provided by Careful Clean, serving the Bay Area with exterior cleaning services, pressure washing, solar panel cleaning, and wood restoration services for residential and commercial clients. Careful-clean.com.
Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. The U.S. Senate may be done with gun control, but California lawmakers are still moving on a clutch of bills in Sacramento. The most recent news, the Assembly followed the state Senate's lead and approved SB 140, which directs $24 million to pay for confiscating guns from people barred from owning them. The state's Justice Department has a list of those folks, but there's a backlog built up over years of budget cuts. That's not to say every gun control measure is getting the go-ahead in Sacramento. Earlier this week, the Assembly Education Committee killed a bill by Republican Tim Donnelly of Twin Peaks. Only one person voted for AB 202, which would have allowed school districts to train teachers and administrators to use guns at schools. In a world where random violence seems to be a constant threat, it can feel like we're on our own, unprotected and unsupported when it happens. Today, as part of our series called What's Your Story, we hear from a woman in Oakland who found strength and solace from a spiritual ceremony called the Wiping of Tears. Here's Sheila Jumping Bull.
2 years ago, I was shot in my leg while waiting for the bus. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. After being shot, I was told I would never walk again, or that if I did, I'd have to walk with a cane. Meaning that I had to stay in bed for 3 months straight, not being able to walk or able to hold my own baby or do anything for myself, I became depressed. I didn't want anything to do with life. Mentally, I was not here. I couldn't believe what was going on. I was angry, confused, and hurt. We have a medicine man that comes to our native community once a month. He does ceremonies, sweat lodges, talking circles. He did a ceremony called Wiping of the Tears. I didn't want to participate in this ceremony, but a lot of people from the Native American community told me that I should because it would help me. A Wiping of the Tears ceremony is a ceremony where you call upon your ancestors and those who have passed before you to come and help heal you and take away your pain. As a medicine man sings these songs, these sacred songs, these ceremonial songs, you pray and you ask for their guidance, their strength, their love, and their help. It helped me in my mental state because I was going through a really hard time and I felt lost. As I prayed and these songs were being sung, I could feel my spirit coming back. I could feel my mentality coming back. I could feel myself being Sheila again, and not some victim. When I think about it, the Wiping of the Tears ceremony really brought me back to reality and helped me to start building my life over again and to build my courage and strength to start trying to help others. I feel like I am me again. I feel determined to let the Native American community know more about mental health and that it's okay to be diagnosed with a mental health issue or to be on medication. It does not mean you are crazy. Thanks to the ceremony and the strength I got from ancestors, I am ready to get my life back and get back to my life.
That was Sheila Jumping Bull of Oakland speaking as part of our series, What's Your Story? Joshua trees across the southwestern U.S. are sporting a riot of flowers this spring. Tourists are rushing to take pictures while they can, and desert biologists are scrambling to explain what accounts for the phenomenal profusion. We sent Caitlin Esch to investigate.
Gnarled and gaunt and dominating the desert landscape, Joshua trees have always made an impression on people crossing the Mojave, and this year the trees are even more striking than usual.
We're heading up to the largest Joshua tree forest on Earth, which is experiencing the greatest bloom that arguably anybody's ever seen.
David Lamfrum is with the National Parks Conservation Association. He's driving up to Sima Dome in the northern part of the Mojave National Preserve, about 3 hours northeast of Los Angeles.
You know, in years past, I had been doing exactly what I'm doing now, and I would see one single tree blooming.
But now every tree here looks like it's in some stage of bloom. Walking into the desert near dusk, the trees cast long shadows. Lamfrum pulls back the waxy cream-colored petals of a flower cluster.
There's insects hiding all in this, you see? Can you see all these in here? Like little flies, little bugs. It's kind of a little fountain of life, and even in a dry place like the desert, these plants are putting off so much moisture that everybody's coming in to get some pollen.
The flowers are beautiful, but this year's massive bloom has sparked debate about what's causing it. Lamphrum thinks it's because weather conditions the past year have been just right, with late summer rains and cool winter temperatures. But some other scientists think there's more to it. Desert biologist Jim Cornette has been studying Joshua trees since the 1980s. He says old and young trees usually don't bloom at the same time, and this year it's different.
Very old trees that were starting to fall apart, they were blooming, and then a lot of trees that had never bloomed before were blooming this year.
Cornette says changes in the regional climate might have something to do with the widespread Joshua tree bloom.
My working hypothesis is that these trees are being highly stressed as a result of two serious droughts in a row. And I think that that stress has caused the trees to reproduce in mass throughout their range.
In other words, the trees might be making a last gasp attempt to produce and spread seeds and pollen before they die. Cornette says he also sees signs that the Joshua tree's range is shifting due to climate change. But another biologist who spent decades in the eastern Mojave says he's not convinced that the bloom is as rare as others say it is, or that it's so easy to explain. Jim Andre is director of UC Riverside's Granite Mountains Desert Research Institute. He says there's just not enough evidence to say this year's bloom is related to late summer rains or stress from the drought.
Why are the Joshua trees flowering? There is no simple answer that where we can turn to empirical data.
So the why is unknown for now, but the what, when, and where? With the bloom happening now in the Mojave, David Lamphrum says he's going to enjoy the show while it lasts.
I think that all of us out here know that we're being treated to something that we very well may never see again.
The bloom is expected to continue, maybe for a couple more weeks. For the California Report, I'm Caitlin Esch in Los Angeles.
If you haven't seen one of these pineapple-shaped clumps of flowers, you're in for a treat. Caitlin brought her camera, and we've got photos at californiareport.org. It's the California Report for Friday, April 19th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, with additional engineering by Howard Gelman and Seal Muller. The directors are Vinnie Tong and Paul Lancour. Our interns are Gina Shalaba and Guy Maserati. The editing staff includes Dan Brecky, Erica Kelly, Victoria Malione, and Kat Snow. Our producers are Susie Racho and Nina Thorson. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children, and URS, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical support to public agencies and private companies. URS.com.